The other day I saw where the lava coming out of the hurricane in the Hawaiian Islands right now is 1,250 degrees Celsius. 1,250 degrees. And just the heat of all that from, you know, a mile away produces 120 degree temperatures in the air. And we're in this series on sexual energy and how our culture right now is experiencing the lava heat of overflow of God's designated boundaries of sexuality. And, you know, if you've been touched by the white hot power of sexual energy in a way that was not how God designed you, then you know that this series is absolutely paramount. We, right now, as a culture, are experiencing what happens, we're seeing it with the Me Too movement, when liberation sexually is put in place. There is actually an incredible freedom to sexual boundaries. That's the paradox. Jesus said, the way is wide that leads to destruction. It just seems so liberating at first, right? But that way ends up being narrow. But he said, the way that leads to life starts narrow and it ends up very wide. Remember those words, Matthew 7? And this is, today, we want to talk candidly, but end with healing. So if this is painful for you, which for most of us it probably will be, we are looking at the diagnostic right now painfully, but we're going to do some healing toward the end of this service. So would you take that chain that you had? Maybe you're sitting on it, and it's not a spring that busted in your seat. It's your sitting on chain. And take that and hold that in your hand right now, because that is holding on to hope that healing is coming and renewal is coming. One of the things I want us to walk away from today with this is the cost of the slightest infidelity is always higher than the cost of rebuilding your marriage, if you're married. The cost of transgressing God's boundaries and the energy of sex that's meant to connect us, either in marriage physically or even outside of marriage socially, that the cost of that is devastating. There's no sin like sexual sin. There's no sin. As a matter of fact, I think one of the proofs that we are sexual beings made in the image of God, male and female, he made them, is just in the unique pain that sexuality brings when it's misappropriated. When the lava hits the home, it's unbelievable. And so one of the things we want to walk away from today, with this today, is the idea, the understanding that somebody said this one time, good though done with toil, the toil soon passes, but the good long remains. Evil, though done with pleasure, the pleasure soon passes, but the evil long remains. And that's the nature of this subject matter. Dr. Jay Lindsay is a psychologist in Boulder, Colorado, who is an expert on this subject matter. And he points out that very, very seldom is sexual indiscretion the result of a sudden decision, an emotional decision. It very, very seldom is it just an instantaneous thing. You know, I don't know what was happening. One day Jesus and I are getting along fine. The next day I fell into sexual sin. I don't know what happened. It never happens that way. It almost always is this digression that has taken place. I truly believe the ultimate terrorist is Satan. He is like a terrorist, and he will wait, and he will wait, and he will wait, and he will wait. And then when he knows he's got you, boom. And it's this, Thomas Carlyle, the poet, said, no man suddenly becomes base. Jay Lindsay said this, it begins with, 12, it's 12 steps, it begins with readiness. Things aren't going well at home. My spouse isn't meeting my needs. Second step is alertness, an increased attraction to and watchfulness for members of the opposite sex. And we rationalize, it's okay to flirt. It's only human. Everybody does it. And your Wi-Fi is turned on. It's a big deal. Step two, do not underestimate its power. Once your Wi-Fi is on, it's almost impossible to stop a connection from happening unless God intervenes. And you know what I'm talking about. You know when your Wi-Fi, you turn it off. You're not sending out signals and you're not receiving signals. And you know when you turn it on. Number three, innocent meeting. Usually this is contact by chance or by a common activity. Four, intentional meeting. The path has been monitored and this meeting occurs on purpose. We rationalize, it's okay to play games. I've got to find some way to liven up my work day. Five, public lingering. talking with the person at the exclusion of other people. It's okay. We're in public. 6, private lingering. It usually begins in a group context, he says, but continues after others have gone. It's okay. They chose to leave us. We didn't choose to isolate ourselves. 7, purposeful isolation. This is a pre-planned private meeting, time alone for what we say are legitimate purposes. We needed to work on that project together. I needed to drop that off at her house. 8, pleasurable isolation. This is a jointly pre-planned time alone just to have fun. Everybody needs friends. It just so happens that one of my best friends is a person of the opposite sex. 9, affectionate embrace. This is a hold after a hug. Everybody needs a hug sometimes. It's just an expression of support that I'm not receiving at home. 10, passionate embrace. This is then the erotic connective quality that happens in the hug. I just got carried away. It will not happen again. And it does. That leads to 11, capitulation. That which we thought would never happen, happens. It won't happen again. But my spouse starves me. 12, acceptance. We admit we're having an affair out of choice. We love each other so much. We're right for each other. I've found my soulmate. Besides that, my marriage never was really right in the first place. One of the things I teach students is sow a thought, reap an action. Sow an action, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. Your destiny starts with what you allow to go on in your head. How you allow yourself to think and to ponder and to process is what ends up with the heat destroying your home, destroying your life. And one of the things about this an interesting era we're in as a culture is just the yearning we're having for sexual boundaries. We don't want to admit that we need them, and yet our souls are crying out. We need them, right? We need them. So here's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to act like God said, here are 2 stone tablets. You write on them 10 commandments for Southbrook. Okay, you chisel out 10 commandments. And with my help and my mentor Bob Russell, I want to give you 10 commandments for how I wish we in the Southbrook community would relate to each other. Okay? How we would relate to each other cross-gender. And we're going to unpack this fully next week. Next week, we're going to just unpack how then shall we live as this beautiful mess of brothers and sisters living together, broken and in the process of being restored. We're going to unpack this, how we can help each other. But today, I just want to give you 10 commandments for male-female relationships at Southbrook. Okay, deal? I mean, these aren't really the 10 commandments. Okay, they're not really the 10 commandments. But they're like my pretending that I have stone tablets. 1, here's 1. Thou shalt demonstrate authenticity and yearn for continuous growth. This is not a religious place where you get to compartmentalize your life. That's what religion allows people to do. My job's to mess up. I go into the right place, and God's job is to forgive. Who doesn't like this arrangement? I mean, this is a great deal. Religion is awesome for letting you compartmentalize your life. You know, I just do the right things and God cleans it all up. And I can go out again on Saturday night and do it again. Right? And this is not a religious place. I hope you do understand that if you're coming here for religion so that you can just get your little God fix and 2 pounds of God in a paper sack to go and then do whatever you want, this is the wrong place. There's not much value in this place religiously. That's why I do not understand swingers who go to church. I don't understand it. I don't understand swingers who call themselves Christians because it is a mockery of the covenant of marriage. It is a mockery. And this is not that place, okay? I just want you to know. Find a place where you can not integrate your life, but this is a place where we yearn for authenticity and continuous growth. Are you with me on this, friends? And I cannot tell you what it's like to have people like Dave Scharf in my life the last zillion years that I can say, hey, here's what spiritual battle I'm going through. And people that I don't image manage around and they don't image manage around me, we're not trying to put on this veneer of pseudo-spirituality. We're trying to live with an honest transformation of our inner being. The great section on this is in Matthew 26. Jesus went with them to a garden called Gethsemane and told his disciples, "Stay here while I go over there and pray." And taking along Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he plunged into an agonizing sorrow. And then he said, "This sorrow is crushing my life out. Stay here and keep vigil with me." You must find people that you can walk through life with authentically as you grow together. If you don't have that, religion is going to leave you hollow, because you're going to go, it's what Paul said in 2 Timothy 3, having a form of godliness but denying its power. So you go, this Jesus thing just doesn't work. That's because you did religion, you didn't do Jesus. You didn't do his community of faith that rocks a person from the inside out and leaves them never the same again. Thou shalt yearn for authenticity and growth. Okay? Let's just pray. Let's just end there, because we're all feeling guilty right now, you know, on this one. So let's just, sorry to give you false hope there, but number two, thou shalt commit to a constant renewal of healthy sexuality. As I said, this is number two, because this is like right up there with number one. In this culture, you have to do this. I remember when I developed an unhealthy view of women. I can remember when it happened. I can remember the moment. Is we're in the locker room in eighth grade basketball, and somebody threw a Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue right in the middle of the guys. And it was like a bunch of wolves on bleeding sheep. And I remember right then just, I mean, I don't know about, I grew up in an era when what I knew about sex was the cows, man. I mean, that's what they did. I mean, I didn't care. I mean, I was like, I didn't care. And that right there, I remember. I can tell you the moment when I had to, like every person in this room, I had to begin a recovery process from seeing the opposite sex in a unidimensional way. And what is that dimension? Physical. Physical. And so in this culture, if you want to walk with freedom sexually, you have to commit yourself to a constant renewal of a healthy sexuality, because you're not going to get it in this culture. It's not happening. And so, for example, look at this. The five dimensions. Okay, look at this is awesome. Go back to 1 Timothy 5. We're going to unpack this next week in full. This is a great verse. Write this down. Paul tells Timothy, here's how to relate to each other in this faith community. Treat younger men as brothers. It's any man 56 on down. Older women as mothers. No comment there, right? I ain't going there, man. And younger women as sisters with absolute purity. Now, some of you may have wondered, is he trying to sound like a parson or something because he calls everybody brother and sister? No, I'm setting up a boundary. You're my sister. I got 2,000 sisters in this church, and that's what you are. You're my sister. And I call them brothers just to be like an equal opportunity employer with this. You are my brothers. In that boundary, Paul says, Timothy, set up this boundary. Don't give in. And you're going to hear this in a minute. Timothy was in Ephesus, which was sex central. It would make Vegas look like the Vatican. Okay? Ephesus would. And he says, you live differently with filters within a culture that sexualizes everything. Sexualizes everything. You don't live that way. You're able to look, and for Timothy's case, at women five-dimensionally. There is a physical dimension, but there is also an intellectual dimension. There's an intellectual dimension. That is, she has a mind. She has a reality of intellect. There's an emotional dimension. She has feelings. These feelings are complicated from the result of so many hurts and wounds in her life that make her vulnerable in many ways. There is a relational dimension, that she has a history of her family of origin and her friendships and all this history that makes her a multi-layer individual, just the relational dimension alone. And then there is a spiritual dimension. She is a beloved child, made in the image of God, loved by God. Now, the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition doesn't come out and say, read the stories because you're going to get the multi-dimensions of these girls on the pages. Doesn't do that, does it? It totally wants you to frame your view of that woman in a single dimension. Now, here's the thing on this. As I'll just tell you this, any of us guys who have daughters, all we have to do is remember that girl is someone's daughter. So all guys who have daughters in particular, if you cannot integrate your life around that truth, you are so disintegrated. God is your hope, and he will change you, but God is your hope. Because if you can look at women unidimensionally on purpose and you have a daughter yourself, we got to disconnect, friends. We got to disconnect. And so God, look at this. We live in this culture. So there's this ideal for men and women that we would see each other five-dimensionally. And there is this constant in our culture, this lustful reductionism of men and women to unidimensional beings. And we live within this sin-stained reality. So you have to, it's just a reality, you have to constantly be living to allow your sexuality to be redeemed and renewed. It is a constant for you in this culture. One time, a young clergyman in training asked an older, more experienced clergyman, "Father, when will I reach the age when the sins of the flesh no longer appeal to me?" And the old, experienced clergyman said, "Son, I wouldn't trust myself until I was dead 4 days." You know, we're all, I mean, I'm telling you, this one ends when you die. Okay, that's when this battle ends. It's just in this culture, it's going to go on and on and on and on. Let's go to number three. Thou shalt use appropriate touch. Look at these words from Romans 16:16. Greet one another, say it with me, with a holy kiss. So that's the Middle Eastern greeting of, you know, that's the Middle Eastern greeting. Transferred into our culture, it is a warm embrace. It is an informal / formal greeting where we may give a hug or something like that. And Paul says, again, in that same spirit of desexualizing male-female relationships, you make sure that there is a filter in your embrace of the opposite sex that is always non-sexual in its spirit and its intent. And so, you know, I remember a few weeks ago there was a Christian singer at the Nutter Center, and somebody on Twitter put, "Going to be a whole lot of side hugs tonight at the Nutter Center." Because that's what Christians are known for, is kind of the side hug, right? I mean, there's an appropriateness to that. I'm not saying that you can't do a front hug. I'm just saying there has to be a boundary. Now, I'm going to let you in a little bit on how my brain works on this, okay? I don't mean to offend any of my sisters here. But I have what I call the poison ivy Pat rule. If you want to hug me, I will, but it's like you got poison ivy, okay? And I don't want to get your poison ivy. It's just a boundary that I have to set up. That wasn't as funny as it was at the other services. I don't know. But, you know, it's a three-pat. You know, I get poison ivy by looking at it. So, you know, you got to set up. It's just you better have emotional intelligence in this era or you're going to be toast. And that means you're able to read somebody else's emotional vulnerability and relational vulnerability and your own. Because it is real, friends. You are a beautiful mess. You're an image-bearing creation of God, an artwork that has been destroyed by the entity of sin. And if you are naive about that, the terrorist is going to get you. He's going to get you. And the lava is going to destroy your life. And so one of the things about this is, you know, I give the poison ivy pat. You'll see me give fist bumps and high fives. That's just my way of saying, sister, I love you, but I love you like high five. Okay? And in the body of Christ, there ought to be this, we can't relate to each other. There ought to be, Paul says, Romans 16:16, there ought to be a community where we're supporting each other, but we're not like the rest of our world that sexualizes everything, right? Not like the rest of the world. Look at what it says in the Message Bible, holy embraces all around. Like there ought to be this, you know, this community where we're free because we have a healthy sexuality. We are free to love one another, but it is a holy embrace. I think I told you a while back. I can't remember if I told you this. A good friend of mine, John, he's a minister, and his wife, Susan, they went to a church. They were visiting a church one weekend, and the pastor was really lovey-dovey and, really trying to, get everybody to love each other. And it went beyond us saying, stand up and greet each other. He said, stand up and look to the person that near you and say, I love you. We're never going to do that here, okay? We're never going to do that here. And John said he turned around and he went to say, I love you. And looking at him was the most beautiful blonde he'd ever seen in his life. And she looked at him, she goes, I love you. And John's wife, Susan, grabbed his shoulders, turned him around and said, we love you too. And put him back down on his seat. That is a woman who's not naive, man. That is a holy embrace, right? That is a holy embrace. Number four, thou shalt be seen in public with your spouse supporting each other. Hold hands when you can. We don't want PDA, public displays of affection, too much, but you know, let people send a message. And one of the things Sherry does on purpose is Sherry, I love this woman so much. She on Instagram, she will post pictures. She's very aware of the tendency on Instagram to show your life in its best moments. And she says, I don't care. I'm going to show people that you and I are together. If I ever, sometimes you ask me, what would ever happen if you fell into infidelity? I said, well, I know one thing, double murder. She would kill her, and then she would kill me, but she'd let me live a little longer just to deal with the consequences of it. And I just love this about her. She is so protective. And, you know, there's this verse, Proverbs 5:15. Look at this. Drink. It's talking about adultery and the dangers of it. Drink water from your own cistern. Running water from your own well. That's the idea that, you know, you make sure the world sees the water drooling down your shirt. When it comes to your relationship with your spouse, take advantage of opportunities to be seen with your spouse in a healthy situation. Number five, thou shalt flee any hint of sexual misconduct in your life. And this is where once you start seeing little flows of lava, I'm telling you, friends, it's that stuff that kills. In Ephesus, where the Ephesian letter was written, and 1st and 2nd Timothy were written to the Ephesus church, was the temple Diana, the goddess who worship for her centered around sexual orgies. So imagine these people coming out of, they were once followers of Diana, now they're followers of Jesus. That's a slight change in lifestyle. And think about that. And Paul writes, and look what he says in Ephesians 5:3, Timothy, or to the church at Ephesus, I'm sorry, don't allow love to turn into lust. This was at the core of the Christian movement, was not lust now, not an unhealthy sexuality, but love, which is self-giving. Setting off a downhill slide into sexual promiscuity, filthy practices, or bullying greed. Though some tongues just love the taste of gossip, those who follow Jesus have better uses for their language than that. Look at this. Don't talk dirty or silly. That kind of talk doesn't fit our style. Thanksgiving is our dialect. Isn't that good? Thanksgiving is our dialect. Now look at this. This is interesting when it comes to just a hint of sexual immorality in your life. I'm talking about how you talk. You know, it's always funny with like coarse language because a lot of guys, I want to let you in on a secret, gals. Guys come to church and their hope is that Jesus will help them cuss less on the golf course. That's really what they're wanting out of this whole deal. Like if they get that, Jesus will have performed a miracle. And, you know, so they get into this. I've actually had guys ask me, do you not cuss anymore? Like this is the almost, you turn water into wine even if you do that, you know. Well, there is an issue with that. And here's the issue. The issue isn't, oh, you cussed, you're evil, you know, punish yourself. That's not the issue. The issue is this. Jesus said that your talk flows out of the overflow of your heart, so you're saying more with your mouth than you even realize about who you are. But what most people don't know is what James said. James, his brother, took that in the opposite way in James 3, and he said, your mouth is like the rudder of a ship, like the bridle of a horse. You can direct the ship and direct the horse anywhere you go, want it to go by that little instrument. And here's the thing about sexual morality. It often starts with how you talk. And so the whole deal about, you know, coarse joking and stuff isn't just because of the Me Too movement. It's because my life goes where I allow my mouth to go and how I speak. There is a correlation to that. Now, this obviously includes anything in your life that you know is a source of needing to be secret. Like, if you wouldn't do it sitting here in front of, you know, someone you know, when it comes to a page, a picture, anything, then Jesus said, if your eye causes you to sin, cut it out. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. He wasn't saying literally, he was saying hyperbolically. He was saying, listen, cut off the sources that allow the devastation of sexual sin to come into your life. It may sound puritanical, I know, but it is so deadly. You better be not naive about this. Number six, thou shalt not cross-gender counsel. Now, I realize that in counseling situations with professionals, this has to happen. I'm very aware of that. And some of you work in environments where this may not be possible. But within the church, where relationships get feely, right? Because we're supporting each other. We're ministering to each other. Never cross-gender counsel one-on-one. Don't do it. There's so many things that happen with this phrase right here. I'm feeling this from my spouse. And then it's said back, I know. I feel the same way. Boom. I've had dozens of people tell me that is where I can look back and that's where it started. That's where it started. Now, the thing is, what happens is you are in a marriage where he's not paying attention to you. Like, you dyed your hair orange, fuchsia, pink, purple 2 weeks ago. He didn't even notice, say anything about it. He's just not paying attention to you. And all of a sudden, someone's listening to you. Don't do it. This is only my commandments. These aren't God's, but I'm telling you, this is what I would wish for us. Number seven, thou shalt not ride alone in a vehicle with a member of the opposite sex. That is true now more than ever. There's probably nothing good that can come from that. At the very least, you could get accused of something that is not true, but you put yourself in a situation where there's no accountability. Number eight, thou shalt not be in the building alone or in a secluded room with someone of the opposite sex. This is a fertile soil for electricity to happen, right? This is why so many illicit romances bloom in the office, is because we were in a room and electricity happened. And when you feel that, you shut off the Wi-Fi. But the better thing is be a prude. When I started doing this series, I had a friend tell me, I remember we were playing tennis about 7-8 years ago, and we were playing with a local college player, and I had to leave early. He told me this. I've forgotten this. He told me this. My friend told me this. He goes, I had to leave early, and my friend said, I'll get a ride home with her. And he said, I thank God that you said no. No, you know you're not going to go home with her. He's a prominent person in our community. You would know who he is. I said, no. And I didn't even remember that. But it is wise, wise counsel to just, I know, it sounds Victorian. But electricity happens. Now, I want to say something about these office things, okay? Here's the thing on these office things. I'm going to leave an image in your mind that is going to be probably appalling to some of you, but just remember this. If you're attracted to him right now, he smells so good. He looks so good. He's so nice. You're not seeing him in the couch potato position with Doritos stuck to his 5 o'clock shadow and he just farted, okay? Which, the longer you're married, the more that's going to happen. All right? You're idealizing him. You're not seeing her. If you saw her with curlers in her hair and face paint on and morning breath, it would scare you to death. Like, if you saw that at 3 a.m, it would scare you to death. And you're not, so we idealize, and I'm telling you, most infidelity happens not because of the other person, because there's stuff going on in me that I'm not aware of. And then we go and we get with that person and we realize, oh my gosh, I just took my problems with me, because wherever I am, I'm there. I'm there too. And so learn to shut off the electricity. The best way to do that is to not be in a room alone. Number 9, thou shalt avoid intimate and secret digital relationships with members of your group of the opposite sex. I know this in work environments today, we have to have texting, email interchanges. If you have to hide it, like if you have to delete it, you're in dangerous territory. You're in dangerous territory. Many of us know part of what elicited this series in us is one of our mentor churches is going through a tremendous turmoil right now. Willow Creek Community Church. This church has mentored us for 20-some years, and they're in an upheaval now because their senior pastor has resigned because of accusations of lines being crossed, and 1,200 emails were deleted from his email account. Now, I don't know what I'm talking about with that whole situation. Anything I say is speculation. But if you got to delete 1,200 emails from your account, there's a problem there. There's a problem there. You see, if you don't want to get stung, don't go to the beehive. Don't hang around the beehive. If you don't intend on eating donuts, don't go to the Bills and sniff, okay? I mean, I'm on that paleo diet, and there are things I miss. And Bills, Boston creams with that like custard filling. Oh, I miss those. And if I stood outside the back of Bills and went, while people go in and out the door, yeah, I'd be in. I mean, it's just, I there's no way. And so digital is the new sniff. Digital is the new way you can sniff the smell of the donuts and think that you're not going to eat the donuts. It doesn't happen. There's a little story of a guy who was on a diet, and he came into the office one day, and he was holding a box of a dozen donuts. And the receptionist said, "I thought you were on a diet." He said, "Well, I am. But on the way to work today, I prayed to the Lord. I said, Lord, if you don't want me to eat donuts today, then do not provide an empty parking space in front of the donut shop." But sure enough, the 8th time around the block, there was an empty space around the donut, you know, in front of the donut. And it's true that we will find ways, and the easiest way to slip that smell in is digitally. Am I right? Or am I right? Or am I right? It is the playground of perversion of healthy sexuality. You got to watch it. And there better be an openness, okay? Number 10, thou shalt not talk about your marriage struggles to a person of the opposite sex. Never, never say, "I know what you mean. My wife and I are having the same problems." Never let that leave your mouth. Never let it happen. Put up a fence, because you know what? I'm going to tell you from years of experience, there's one thing better than the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. It's the fence at the top. And God put stop signs, not because he's an ogre who loves to steal our joy, America, because we want to be free. God loves you. And John said it this way in 1 John 4. He said, "His commands to us are not burdensome, therefore are good." We call it a freeway because there are rules, right? You can reasonably expect to get to Dayton today if you need to go there, because that freeway has rules that you expect people to abide by. And those boundaries give us freedom, don't they? Now, there's enough pain in this room right now to implode this room. There are people here who have been victims of sexual abuse since they were a little guy or a little gal. I was when I was 6 years old. There are those of you who have distortions sexually. You don't think there's any hope for you to ever see women or men other than in a unidimensional way physically. There are spouses whose spouses have cheated on them. And the anger you brought into this room today. There are people with shame and guilt. Guilt is, "I've done something wrong." Shame is, "There's something wrong with me." Legitimate shame is, "There's something wrong with you," because there is. Illegitimate shame is, "There's something wrong with me that's not wrong with other people." That's illegitimate. And there's loads of that right now. Would you take your chain and would you open up your soul right now and would you let God speak to you? and see if you believe this is true for you. See if you believe this is true. If you have to, close your eyes, do what you have to do, but let God and His Word enter your soul. If we have been united with Him in a death like His, we will certainly also be united with Him in a resurrection like His. For we know that our old self was crucified with Him. That's when you accepted His claim of your life. He took the nails. You took the freedom. His shame became your freedom. That's what this is saying. So that the body ruled by sin might be done away with. That we should no longer be slaves to sin. Because anyone who has died has been set free from sin. So can you say today, Jesus, I have died with you and I'm raised to a new life. And if that's true, the truest thing about you is His righteousness. Do you know that? It's not that you were abused as a child. It's not that you were an object or you were a thing or you were a sex slave at one time. That's not the truest thing about you anymore. The truest thing about you is the righteousness of Jesus. It's amazing. Now, if we died with Christ, we believe that we will also live with Him. For we know that since Christ was raised from the dead, He cannot die again. Death no longer has mastery over Him. The death He died to sin once for all, but the life He lives to God. That's you now. In the same way, count yourselves dead to sin, but alive to God in Christ Jesus. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body so that you obey its evil desires. Do you know that in Christ, you don't have to say, hey, whoa, you're my dog, I'm not your boy. You don't have to be pulled along by this anymore. You can have authority. Don't offer any part of yourself to sin as an instrument of wickedness. Not your eyes, not your hands, not your mouth, not your genitals, nothing. Look at this. But rather offer yourselves to God as those who have been brought from death to life and offer every part of yourself. He's talking physically to Him as an instrument of righteousness. For sin shall no longer be your master because you are not under law, but under grace. Wait a minute. I think it was the law that would be the motive. No, because the shame that comes from you knowing you broke the law, that no longer is the issue. He took that shame when He was hung naked on the cross. That is no longer a point of separation between you and God. You're now under grace. You are covered by His righteous life, His blood. So then Jesus says the same thing. If you stick with this, living out what I tell you, you are my disciples for sure, then you will experience for yourselves the truth, and the truth will set you free. That is at the those words are at the bottom of the Statue of Liberty with a broken chain. Those words, John 8:31. Surprised, they said, but we're descendants of Abraham. We've never been slaves to anyone. How can you say the truth will free you? Jesus said, I tell you most solemnly that anyone who chooses a life of sin is trapped in a dead-end life and is in fact a slave. A slave is a transient who can't come and go at will, but the Son has an established position, the run of the house. Southbrook, claim this last sentence with me, will you, by saying this out loud with me. So, if the Son sets you free, you are free through and through. Do you believe that's true of you? And the rest of your life will be that truth growing out of you. Because it can be. You can be free. So here's what we're going to do. All the anger, all the guilt, all the shame, all the distortion that was brought into this room today, we are going to leave it here at the foot of the cross. And we're going to ask you to take your chain and what it represents, and you're going to hear an audible response of the beautiful mess of Southbrook as those chains are dropped into those metal buckets. Just listen. And we're going to sing this song that we know. And when you're ready, I'm going to be the first one. I'm going to go over here in a moment, and I'm going to drop my chain in the bucket. When you're ready, you bring your chain up. You take communion. You can go back to your seat. It'd be really good to reflect on the meaning of these words. Because if the Son sets you free, you will be free through and through. Does anybody want that? Let's sing together.